Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Hall of Fame edition of NASCAR America Motor Mouse. Marty Snyder, Jeff Burton, and Nate Ryan, fresh from the vote, by the way. Nice jacket,
that's why I've
Nate.
Got
we
this
love
get up on.
The jacket and tie. The
no, 2023 he's making us look bad.
Inductees into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. What'd you say?
He's making us look bad.
He
we
is.
Don't love
well,
that.
Well, you know, that happens often, doesn't it? Matt Kenseth, Kirk Shelmerdine, Herschel McGriff, and Mike Helton gets the Landmark Award, so congratulations to the class of 2023. Hey, speaking of Hall of Famers, our Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett, will be here in a little bit. And the new Hall of Famers, Matt Kenseth, Kirk Shelmerdine, will be here as well. And later in the show, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. will join us as well. So we have a jam-packed show today. Of course, we're going to hear from you guys as well. 844-NASCAR-NBC is how you get a hold of us. So a lot happening today. Jeff, I want to get your reaction right off the top of the class of 2023, including your former teammate, Matt Kenseth.
Yeah, really good class. You look at what you know what all these guys did in the sport. Kirk Shelmerdine winning the 4 championships, a ton of races. Matt Kenseth. You look at what he's done. I mean, 2 Daytona 500s, the Southern 500, Coke 600, All-Star win, Cup championship. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Matt, they're all really well-deserving, and it's good to see. I am ecstatic for Mike Helton. I'm a huge Mike Helton fan. Mike Helton is a leader in this sport, and I am so happy that he was recognized today because he has had made an unbelievable amount of contributions to this
sport. Has been a leader for decades and still really is, Nate. So kind of give us a feel for in the room, how the discussions went, how the vote went compared to past years, maybe.
So past years, Marty, I would say it's been a little bit more contentious. Sometimes some arguments break out. This year, you know, we started at 1 p.m. We were done by 2:45.
Wow.
And I think they had another hour built into the schedule for potential discussion. I think people arrived knowing who they wanted to vote for. To Jeff's point, I think Kenseth was very much a clear-cut first ballot Hall of Famer. He was the only Cup champion on the ballot, both modern era and pioneer, one of the most consistent drivers in history, and also the Triple Crown winner with Coca-Cola 600, Southern 500, and the 2 Daytona 500 wins. So that was clear cut. And I think Herschel McGriff, he finished in the top 3 vote getters last year of guys who didn't get inducted. So I think even though you can look at his record and say, you know, there's not a lot there in terms of Cup success, only 4 Cup victories, Herschel McGriff had a lot of support coming in, and, you know, he's the guy who raced the 1950 Southern 500.
I was going to say
the very first race at Darlington Raceway, where NASCAR will be this weekend. Herschel McGriff drove his Oldsmobile from Oregon, where he lives, to Darlington, raced that car at Darlington, and then drove home. So a great story and a long career.
Herschel's a great example of, you know, this is a NASCAR Hall of Fame. It's not a Cup Series Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Herschel McGriff is a great example of someone that contributed to the sport, had tons of success, not just at the Cup level. I mean, tons of wins in what now is the ARCA Series. And, I mean, he was the leader of that. And so he had a major impact on this sport. And it's important for, you know, for people at home that don't really know, like, this is not just a Cup Series Hall of Fame. It is a Hall of Fame that goes throughout all the NASCAR, and it's great that drivers like Herschel McGriff can be recognized.
Herschel's still with us at 94, and the oldest person to ever enter a NASCAR race at 90 years old. So he's got a lot of stats I love. Also ran the 24-hour Le Mans twice as well. Kirk Shelmerdine, 46 wins with Dale Earnhardt Sr. as a crew chief. That's a lot of wins, 4 championships, and they did it in an era where they were able to put him back-to-back twice to be able to do that. And I think had he stayed on crew chiefing, they definitely would have won more. You agree, Jeff?
Well, he was extremely talented, and I think he what he had was he had Richard Childress' respect, and I think they respected each other a great deal. They worked together a lot. He actually crew chiefed Richard Childress, one of his race wins. He was crew chief in that, so they had a history together. You know, Kurt went on to try to be a driver. I mean,
Which is really the only reason he quit.
Essentially why he left. Yeah.
He did what a lot of crew chiefs said, if I was driving that thing, I'd do this. Well, he went and did it, right? So it's cool to see Kurt go off and try to do that. But, yeah, you look at the championships, and with 46 race wins as a crew chief, with multiple different drivers and four championships, he's very, very deserving.
What I think is cool about Kirk Shelmerdine getting in is, as Jeff was saying earlier, this is not just a Cup Hall of Fame. It's also not just a Cup Driver Hall of Fame. And I think the early years of the NASCAR Hall of Fame, there were no crew chiefs on the first ballot for the first class of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. They have thankfully corrected that. And this year, there was a lot of discussion about Kirk Shelmerdine, about Harry Hyde. And I think that Shelmerdine getting in was justified because he actually fell off the ballot a couple of years ago. He was on the ballot, and then he came off, and now he's back. And a guy who, you know, a little bit understated. I mean, I heard some things that I didn't know that, you know, when you think about that Earnhardt crew, there are some personalities on the pit crew, and I'm sure you heard stories at Childress.
The old flying aces.
The flying aces. and Kirk Shelmerdine was fine. He was the brains of the operation, but he was fine just sort of like being in the background and letting everybody else and letting one of the greatest drivers of all time have the success.
Yeah, so speaking of the nominees and now the people who will be inducted into the 2023 class in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, one of them joins us now. Matt Kenseth joins us via FaceTime. Congratulations, Matt. We're all happy for you. If I know you, you probably didn't think about this really at all. But what was the reaction when you saw that number pop up and it was, hey, you're in the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
Nah, I mean, I haven't really thought about it much, except for the last 2 days. I got to be honest, I actually thought about it a fair amount. So, but you know me well. I was actually out doing some yard work with Kaylin and came in, and Katie was watching the thing on her phone. So I got to watch Steve O'Donnell introduce it. So, yeah, just you know, it's really just a huge honor to be in consideration to start with, and then to get voted in. Obviously, that's you know, quite the honor. So. Don't really know what to say. Just you know, excited to be in that group and to be voted in.
Well, Matt, hey, look, man, congratulations. I'm really happy for you. If we party about this like we did for your championship, it's going to be trouble. I want to know, like, when you were racing as a young man in Wisconsin, like, did you ever even consider that could be a pathway to the Cup Series?
No, I mean, well, first of all, I still have that shirt from that night, Jeff. I still have that. I don't have many things, but I was going through my closet a few weeks ago. I was looking for a shirt to go to church, and I found that thing still sitting there and has your autograph on it and no buttons for some reason. But anyway, after the second part of your question, no, I mean, it's crazy to think, you know, that the first time I went to the racetrack with my dad when I was 13 to work on his car, and I didn't start driving until I was 16. I had that old 81 Camaro. I still got a picture of it here. I actually have that car here, believe it or not. You know, and then to kind of bookend that with being in the NASCAR Hall of Fame is just a pretty crazy feeling. Never dreamed it ever would have came to that. You know, we just started racing really for something for, you know, father and son to do together, something instructive to do together, and started having a little bit of success here and there, and would meet some other people that would let me drive their cars that we couldn't afford to build. And, you know, it doesn't really seem real. Even when I look back on it now, it's just one thing led to another. And I kept getting more and more opportunities and kept getting some success, and somehow ended up here.
So, Matt, I know how much you love talking about yourself, and and I know that, like, you didn't even think about this until you learned you were going to be nominated, but you did say the last 2 days you were thinking about it. As you reflect on your career, I mean, did you feel as if, hey, I've got a championship, I've got the Triple Crown with two Daytona 500 wins, a Southern 500 win, a Coca-Cola 600 win, I won Rookie of the Year? I mean, did you feel pretty good about your chances?
I didn't really think about that. Like, I didn't really think about, like, numbers and accomplishments or really anything like that. Honestly, it's just been a time where I've kind of reflected a little bit more in my career and, you know, all the people I've worked with and how blessed I was to work with so many great people. I mean, one of them sitting right there in between you, I've just had so many different influences on me and so many different mentors and so many people that have taught me so many things. And really, they deserve the credit. I mean, the driving isn't really the hardest part. It's all the rest of it. And I had a lot of great people that did all that for me through the years. So just fortunate and just so blessed to have had all those people in my life and have some success and to be able to cap off a career like this.
Matt, what would you say really fueled you throughout the years? Because my guess is it would just be being behind the wheel and the racing part of it, because you are still racing. You raced at Madison this past weekend. So was it really just the racing aspect that was the real love of the game for you?
For sure, the competition. You know, I've always liked competition. You know, it was just trying to go out and be the best at something. And I never quite got there, but we were pretty competitive. And there were certain days we were the best, and we were able to win races and do those things. But, you know, and also, you know, when I started racing my dad, like I said, it was for something for a father and son to do together, you know, race some of the local short tracks. And then I remember the first time I drove somebody else's car and I actually got paid a little bit of money to drive it. I thought that was like the greatest thing in the world. Like, man, if I could actually, I'm being paid to drive a race car, like, this is great. And I think when that happened, I was like, man, I need to figure out how to do that, because it's better than, you know, just working on them or just doing whatever. I get to work on them, build them, do the things I always dreamed of doing. And you get paid to do it and can do it as a job and as a living. So I say that, you know, that was it. I've always been competitive. I loved racing. If I would have never got paid to race or got hired for somebody to race, I would have spent all my money on racing, because that's how much that we loved it.
So Matt, this is always a difficult question, but I got to ask it. When you look back on your career, what's the biggest moment, the one you look back on and say, man, I'm really proud of that, and you can never take it away?
Man, it's hard to just, you know, it's just hard to pick one. I think the first time you do anything is always special. You know, your first start, your first win, all that. I know, you know, driving Bill's car at Dover was really, really cool. I first Xfinity Series win, Busch Series win, then at Rockingham was probably one of the biggest wins, I'd say, of my career for a lot of reasons. I was driving for John and Robbie Reiser and their family. We didn't really have a sponsor on the car. Everybody's in, you know, blue jeans and polo shirts and mismatch. Actually, our gas man was wearing a track gear, a fire suit, which was from your Xfinity team that day, Jeff. And we were able to win the race, and nobody expected us to win, including ourselves. Made a last corner, the last lap pass for the win. I mean, that was one of the coolest days of racing in my life. And then it'd be hard to honestly top that one. I mean, obviously our first cup win and winning the 600 was huge as well. But if I just had to pick one, I'd probably say that day winning that first first Busch race. It was my first NASCAR win of any kind. And like I said, that continued my career. I don't know what would have happened without that. Because of that win, the sponsor signed up for the rest of the year and were able to run full time the rest of that year, won a few more races. I think we finished second or third in points. And, you know, that helped us get to the next step.
That's a wonderful story, Matt, and I think I heard the name Reiser in there. And when you talk about feeling blessed and all the people who have helped you throughout your career, I'm sure there's too many to mention, and you don't want to name too many because you don't want to neglect others, but, like, who does kind of rise to the top of the list? I mean, I'm sure Jack Roush, Robbie Reiser, who are those people that you were thinking about the last 2 days that made you so fortunate to get to where you are?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the list is too long and you're going to miss a lot of people, but I always, it seems – people probably think this is a silly analogy, but I kind of look at, you know, your career like a ladder, and to get to the top, you need every single rung in that ladder. And without one of those rungs, you know, maybe without one, but without two, you're not going to get to the top of that ladder. So I feel like everybody that helped me from the first day to the last day was, you know, in a way equally as important to get you, you know, where you're at, you know, certainly, you know, John Reiser and Robbie and their family and that team, you know, meant a lot. Started out racing the Busch Series together, moved up to Cup together, won our first race together, won our first championship together. We did a lot of things together and had a ton of fun doing it. You know, Jason Ratcliffe was a huge influence in my life, and I worked with him for 5 years at Joe Gibbs Racing and had some success there with him as well. So, but like you say, you can't really, you know, from the first guy that owned your first late model or the first guy that volunteered his time to help you on your late model to the last guy that helped you, you know, in a way are all equals, because without any of those, you know, your career might have looked a lot different.
Let's grab a couple phone calls here at 844-NASCAR-NBC of folks who want to talk to you, Matt. We'll start with NASCAR. NASCAR, you're on with Matt Kenseth. Go ahead, bud.
Hey, congratulations, Matt. Well deserved. You won the first cup race I ever went to at Michigan. My question is, if you had a driver from the past that you would have loved to race against, who would it have been?
You know, I think it would be more like what era would you want to race in? I don't know that there's necessarily just a driver that you'd want to just, you know, take on that maybe you didn't get to race against. I don't know. That's a tricky question, but I think there's different eras. I think it'd be neat to race in different eras with different cars, different racetracks. When you look back and you see some of the older race cars, I think it'd be cool to go back and race against those drivers, but go back in time and race those cars against those drivers, I think would be fun. I think, you know, I probably watched a lot in the 80s. So, I mean, if I could go back and obviously I wasn't old enough to drive then, but if you could go back in time and probably race through the mid to late 80s, I always thought that's when I was a kid and really watching the racing and really got into it and got into the storylines, and they're still on bias ply tires and you could see smoke coming off the tires, and it's just they're really fun to watch. I thought they're kind of big square boxy cars with bumpers on them still. So if I go back and race anything, it would be against, I guess, that group in that era.
So, Matt, I want to ask you, do you see yourself slowing down anytime soon now that you're a Hall of Famer? I mean, you just ran the Boston Marathon. I hear rumors you might run London in October, and you're running more races this summer. I mean, your schedule's as busy now as it's ever been.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to have something to do. So the marathon stuff, I don't know. Most people can't figure it out. Sometimes I don't either, but it just kind of it gets me some structure. It gets me something to train for every day. I'm really busy with the kids, a good busy, you know, driving them around and going to their sports and, you know, spending tons of time with them, being part of their daily life, which I'm really thankful that I can do that. Besides that, when they're in school, I got other things I like doing and other hobbies and stuff, but really I just need some structure and something competitive to do and try to push myself to be better and beat my last time or move up in my age group or whatever it might be. So, you know, that kind of keeps me going. So I'm not sure what's next. I'm going to run another late mile race and a couple SRX races just for some fun and see how it goes.
Herschel McGriff ran his last race at 90.
You got a lot of time to go, Matt.
Yeah, I'd be pretty happy if I see 90.
All right, but hey, from the three of us and everyone here, congratulations. Awesome to see you. We'll see you early next year for the induction, okay?
All right, sounds great. I sure appreciate it, guys.
All right, Hall of Famer, Matt Kenseth. Maybe the first time he's heard that introduction. And speaking of Hall of Famers, our Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett, will be joining us next. We'll talk about this class and what's up. And DJ's like, there's DJ. What's up, man? Talk to you in a minute.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome back to Motor Mouse. Here is the 2023 class for the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Matt Kenseth, first ballot, gets in the Hall of Fame. Kurt Schelmerding, four-time Cup Series championship crew chief, joins his driver, Dale Earnhardt Sr., in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Herschel McGriff from the Pioneer ballot, and Mike Helton with the Landmark Award. You know, appropriate that Herschel is on there since he ran the first ever Southern 500 at Darlington, and this weekend we head to Darlington as well. And joining us, our Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett. Good to see you, DJ. So what's your reaction to the four that wind up getting in the Hall of Fame in 2023?
Well, I think my reaction is that remembering back to whenever I found out that I was going to be a part of the Hall of Fame, just that excitement and that feeling that you get of accomplishment, of all the hard work and effort, and everything that you put into the sport. Not that anybody was thinking about being a part of the Hall of Fame, but just being the best that you can be and now being rewarded. So the good thing about this day is that there are no wrong answers in any of these. And so that's the good thing. Everyone well-deserving of that. And certainly, you know, when you look at Matt Kenseth, I was just listening to him and going through his career and things. And I mean, he won every type of big race, from a couple of Daytona 500, Southern 500, the Coke 600, the All-Star race. And oh, yeah, he went about it in a way that he was just the ultimate competitor out there year in and year out, and could drive and be successful on any type of track. And, he made the playoffs 13 of 14 years. So there was no doubt Matt Kenseth was going to be in the Hall of Fame, but surely he is deserving of being there his first time on the ballot. And, it's just good to see people being recognized for things. Kirk Shelmerdine, the effort that he put forth week in and week out for Dale Earnhardt. Did he have one of the greatest drivers ever? Sure. But you got to give him the car, the equipment, make sure that he's got everything that he needs, and a well-deserved honor there. Mike Helton is someone that I've looked up to ever since I met Mike. And it's just incredible what he has done for this sport over the years. Not just the sport, but the competitors, the sponsors, everyone involved in this. Mike Helton has been not only a gentleman to everyone, but he's also been that person that will bring down the hammer on you whenever that needed to be done. And so I really appreciate everything that he went through to work his way up to be president of NASCAR. It's just an incredible journey for him. And certainly, I can't say enough about Herschel McGriff. My gosh, what hadn't the man done? And it's just incredible there. So I just appreciate the longevity, I guess you would say. I saw him just the other night. I went out to the wigwam where Kyle Petty and was getting ready for their charity ride, and I saw Herschel there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just incredible to see this man still at his age getting around and doing things.
DJ, I agree with you that there are no wrong answers when it comes to figuring out who the four are going to be from the 15 that you have. But you have a unique perspective because you were part of the committee that put together the nominee list this year. So you have some insight on that. And when you look at this class, I mean, it sounds like from your enthusiasm, I mean, did we get it right? Like, I know there are no wrong answers, but did you like what you ended up seeing after being a part of putting together the list of names that we'd be voting on?
Yeah, again, I won't sit here and tell you that this is exactly the four that I voted for. I'll say that everyone is more than deserving. And I looked at things a little bit. Of course, I'm on the driver's side more. So that's not saying that Kirk Shelmerdine and many others, Dale Inman, and look back through the years of people that made a difference preparing these race cars. So yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said for these four. Again, you can't go wrong with them. And when you look at the accomplishments that they had in the sport and the things that they have done to make the sport a better sport, that's what you're looking for when you get these nominees, and each and every one of them have done that.
DJ, you have a perspective like few others. You know, your father was obviously extremely successful in the sport. You were extremely successful. You both went on to a broadcasting career. So I don't know that there's really that many people that have the perspective that you do. You know, you drove it. You own race cars. You did a lot. And that's the kind of people we need to have, you know, in this Hall of Fame voting committee and who nominates it. And thank you for agreeing to do it. But I want to move it forward just a touch. It's throwback weekend, and we're going to Darlington. And we just had the Hall of Fame, throwback weekend. I think it's a great time to have a throwback weekend. What about these cars, these drivers today going to Darlington this coming weekend?
Well, I appreciate the kind words, Jeff. I do appreciate that. And I will say this. I don't know if we're supposed to tell or not tell. You are on my ballot, and you will get there because you're deserving. I'm not just saying that because there. You can look on my ballot and see that. But this is a weekend that is so special when you talk about Darlington and everything and it being this week with the Hall of Fame, because everybody that's pretty much in the Hall of Fame has had some success and failures at Darlington. And I think that what we're going to see this weekend is just going to be incredible. When you think about the history of Darlington and taking this brand new car to Darlington, I think the drivers, as we know, it's a handful every time you go there, regardless of what kind of car you're driving. But I really believe that these drivers are going to be glad this first time there with this car is only 400 miles instead of the Southern 500, because this is going to be a tough day. And I'm not sure, I honestly believe, not because they're not great drivers, but just because of the difficulty of the track and how difficult it is to drive this car, I believe that there's two things. They're going to be into the wall more. We're going to see more cautions, which is going to mean that crew chiefs are going to have some very difficult decisions deciding when to use their tires, because as a driver, you want tires as soon as you've left pit road, you're looking for that next set. And so I believe that that could come into play this weekend.
Yeah, and certainly that's usually something we're talking about for the Southern 500, not the 400-mile race, so that would be interesting. You know, A.J. Allmendinger sat where Jeff is right now last week on Motor Mouse and said he thought when he was chasing down Ross Chastain at COTA that he might be catching the eventual Cup Series champion. And I thought, there's no way that he really thought that back then. But I don't know, maybe, are you starting to believe that, DJ, that Ross Chastain is a legitimate Cup Series championship threat this year?
Oh, 100%. If you look through, to me, if you look through every one of these races, and nobody's been great in every one of them, but the man that stands out and is running the top five more than anyone else and challenged for more wins has been Ross Chastain. And he's put himself in that position. He's taken advantage of opportunities when he's put himself in that position. And then I see a different Ross right now as a driver that's becoming better. I think that this time with Kurt Busch helped him be around that and understand what he needed to do as a driver, and he's a smarter race driver right now. So very talented. We're seeing that week in and week out, but he's a much smarter race driver right now, and I think that's going to benefit him well. When he gets into the playoffs, this is somebody that they're going to have to contend with.
DJ, it seemed like Next Gen raced at Dover really well, maybe even better than people were expecting, but it seemed like we sort of saw the opposite a little bit at Martinsville. We certainly thought we're going to see a little bit more slam-bang action there. So I guess I'll ask you to make the prediction that's impossible to make, but how do you think the Next Gen will race at Darlington, toughest track on the circuit?
I think that the raceability is going to be really good. I believe by what I've seen so far that we're going to see a lot of passing happening, but the drivers are going to have to be careful with this. I know that they have a lot of confidence in this new body, the composite body, that you're not going to sustain the damage if you get into the wall. But I read something that Kevin Harvick said the other day, and that was that he's not as concerned about the body as he is the parts and pieces breaking on this car if you hit the wall there. So I think that's something they're going to have to be very mindful of. But I believe it's going to race really, really well. And I think because of the ability to do that and the difficulty of the track, that's what lends me to believe that we're going to see quite a bit of cautions because of great racing here.
Hey, DJ, I want to get your take on something about Darlington. And this in no way is, you know, talking bad about the current drivers or anything, but a lot of these drivers have never driven a Cup car at Darlington that doesn't make grip. The cars that they drove in the past had tons of side force, tons of downforce. These don't. So how big of a challenge will it be for some of these younger drivers? Kevin Harvick did, Kurt Busch did, but Denny Hamlin did, but Ross Chastain never has. There's several of them that never had. How do they make that adjustment?
You're right, Jeff. This is going to be a huge adjustment for them. A lot of the drivers, as you pointed out, and it takes a different style. I'll go back to the days of things that Harry Gann and Dale Earnhardt did to be successful there, because these cars are going to drive, by what I understand, a lot like those cars did. And you had to attack this racetrack completely different with all the side force and downforce that they have made in quite a few years in the past now. They're going to have to go about driving, attacking, and knowing when and where they can make their moves a lot different. So this is going to be a learning process. And I believe through that learning process, we're going to see some people step over those bounds a little bit more, because they're not going to be able to lean on these cars quite as much as what they have been in recent past. And so that's going to be the fun for us to watch. It's going to be a handful and a difficult 400 miles for the drivers, but we're going to have a great time watching.
All right, DJ, as always, bud, fun hanging out with you. We'll see you soon, okay?
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Dale Jarrett joining us here. So I'll ask you the question you just asked DJ. How are these young drivers going to react to not having all this downforce all of a sudden in the new car? And will this Darlington track be the biggest challenge for them on that front so far this year?
Well, listen, I think that I I've said this all year long. I think this practice schedule thing needs to be adjusted based on the tracks you're going to. Like, I think going to Darlington, it would make a whole lot more sense to have 150-minute practice rather than 220-minute practices or 140-minute practice. I think going to Dover, that would have been the thing to do as well. There's so many new things happening. It's an awful lot to ask a driver to go out at Darlington and have 20 minutes.
Right?
20 minutes to go out there and get you some. And it's, you know, I think we need, as an industry, we need to be a little more flexible in some things like that. But it's a huge challenge. And what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to hit the wall. I mean, you're going to have to get into the wall in the middle of one and two. You're going to have to get in the wall in the middle of three and four to find your limit. That's what you're going to have to do. But at the same token, you learn over time how to get up there and kiss the wall and not knock it down. And these cars, although tough bodies, we talked about earlier, the components are not, the right rear is not going to stand just slam it up against the car, up against the wall. It would be better with this car actually for the right front to get into it. And that's different than what we've seen in the past.
I think the old days of putting a 2x4 Nate in the right side is not going to work this weekend.
It's not going to be the solution anymore.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I don't think it is either.
Here's another thing. You see this, like, so you just saw three wide into turn three at Darlington. When DJ and I raced at Darlington, you did not enter turn one side by side. You didn't do it. If you did, you wrecked. And it's become common to do it. And I'm really curious to watch with this car, with so much less downforce, so much less side force, if these tires wear out like I think they're going to, I'm really curious to see if they can get by with it. And if they do...
Yep.
Do the drivers recognize the give and take that it's required with a super low grip car? They might work it out and be just fine, but with the cars we drove, it was almost impossible to do it.
So then are you thinking this is a veteran type weekend, if I'm reading what you're trying to say?
That's
there?
What I was going to ask, you and Steve Wattarp sat here on Monday and we're just talking about how difficult it was at Dover. You know, Kyle Larson spinning out at Dover. I mean, just like unfathomable that guy would lose control of the car. And like, do they come into this race maybe a little more gun-shy, so much as we're talking about the younger guys?
So that's the thing. So a group of drivers, and I was one of them, started going to Darlington and approaching the track differently. We started attacking the racetrack, and we started having success doing it. And that was unique. And I can remember some older drivers saying to me, you can't race 500 miles like that, and I would. And so these new drivers don't recognize the old Darlington. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can they get by with it? Can they get by with it for 400 miles with this car that doesn't drive well? We don't know yet. They don't know either. But the young drivers aren't going to look at Darlington and say, well, I'm going to take it easy. They're not going to do it. They're going to attack the racetrack from lap one.
So are there teams, I know it's early, but we are, you know, a third of the way through the season. I mean, I'm 10 races down. Are there teams you're starting to get concerned about, Jeff, that you're going, I wonder what's going on and why they haven't shown success yet?
You know, the biggest thing that I see right now is that I think Chevrolet is putting a hurting on everybody. And I just think Chevrolet has found a way to work together better with their engineering support, all the things they got going on there. And Toyota has a good day, then a bad day. Ford hasn't quite gotten where you would expect Ford to be. I think everybody's playing catch-up right now. So I personally, and no disrespect to Hendrick, because to me, Hendrick is the leader of Chevrolet. Sorry, Chevrolet teams, but that's how it's been since I've been in sport. So, you know, Justin Marks and his crew, they're trying to put pressure on him. But Hendrick leads that Chevy camp. Who is going to lead the Ford camp? Like, can Stuart Haas get going? Can Penske get going? Right now, I don't see the Fords being able to run with the Chevrolet.
I mean, certainly not after Dover, where you had the Penske cars barely able to keep up. And you know, we saw Ryan Blaney fall two laps down after winning stage two just because it stayed green. That was not very good. I mean, Stewart Haas Racing, it seems like Harvick is getting a little bit close to, you know, where he was maybe a couple of years ago, but he hasn't won yet. Chase Briscoe has won, but it sort of felt hit or miss. I wonder, Jeff, like who does the Ford camp sort of go to here and say, like, we're going to figure this out? Is it Harvick still, or?
Well, it's whoever can step up to the plate. I mean, honestly, like, I don't think Ford says, hey, Kevin, hey, Joey, we need you to get it done. They're all trying as hard as they can.
Yep.
Right? I will say this. This is a unique year. And I think more so this year than in the past, you can turn it around. Because everything is so new. the opportunity to learn something quickly is there. 2 years ago, if you were struggling early in the year, how are you going to make it up? How are you going to do that?
Good point.
This year, with everything being new, there's so many opportunities to say, hey, we just learned this. And that one thing have a major impact on how fast you can go on the racetrack. So if you're a Ford fan or a Toyota fan, don't quit, because I'm telling you, this is an opportunity year. You can find a way to make it up.
But to your point, Chevrolet's won 7 of 11 races, so kind of hard to deny the stats of 2022 so far. Hey, when we come back, we expect to hear from Kirk Shelmerdine. Coming up in a little bit as well, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He'll join us after the big second-place finish at Dover.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Our man Nate Ryan was in the voting room. These are the guys you voted in to the 2023 NASCAR Hall of Fame, Nate, today.
Indeed, Marty, I had three of these four. I had Matt Kenseth, 2003 Cup champion, and as we mentioned, Coca-Cola 600 winner, Southern 500 winner, two-time Daytona 500 winner as well, and made the playoffs 13 of his last 14 full-time seasons in NASCAR. Herschel McGriff, longest career in NASCAR history, and just recently retired at the spry age of 90.
94. He's 94 now.
Still with us at 94, yeah. So hopefully he'll be at the induction ceremony next year. Kirk Shelmerdine, of course, won 4 championships with Dale Earnhardt, one of the greatest crew chiefs of all time. And Mike Helton, of course,
NASCAR's
Landmark Award.
Kenseth got 69% of the votes, which was very impressive for a first ballot. 69% of the votes. And speaking of Herschel McGriff, he beat out A.J. Foyt for the Pioneer Award. So, I mean, on the Pioneer class. So that's pretty impressive, if you ask me. So certainly a deserving 2023 class. Inductions in late January, right?
January 20th, I believe.
Okay, there you go. I knew you would have that on top of your head. We have been talking about Darlington Throwback Weekend this weekend. So let's take a look at some paint schemes for the weekend. This one looks a little familiar to me. Oh, look at that. Harrison Burton. look at that paint scheme.
It looks like it's an X-side instead of Dex.
Yeah, okay. What year was that, Jeff?
Oh, gosh. You know, 99 maybe?
99?
I don't know.
Your 99 paint scheme?
But from a accuracy standpoint, that gets a 10.
Pretty dead on?
Yeah.
When they first showed you that paint scheme, what was your reaction?
I thought, I don't like that at all. And then the fans loved it.
Yeah.
Like the fans, I'm talking about years ago when, I'm like, lightning bolts, pink. And, matter of fact, at the banquet, when I just met the CEO of Exide and his wife, she brought a rendering of the uniform. She said, that's what I want you to wear. It was pink. When I say pink, I mean pink. And her husband's like, he's not wearing that. The cars I drove, that I think is the fans' most popular. They love the light.
That was from 2000, by the way. You were right on, by the way. It's an iconic paint scheme because it's been copied. I mean, that's been run 4 or 5 times, hasn't it, in Throwback Weekend. Here's Corey LaJoy with the old Marty Robbins 777 car.
That's awesome.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. It looks good. Yeah, we had Corey on a couple weeks ago talking about this.
And he said thanks to NASCAR for letting him run the three numbers.
Very nice. You got the country music and racing connection with Marty Robbins.
Jimmy Means for Chase Elliott. Nice little paint scheme there. That was a 93 paint scheme.
That's great for Jimmy Means.
Yeah.
That's a guy that's done a lot in this sport.
Still around the garage
area. Yes. Cool.
Still hanging out. Here's Chris Buescher. Speaking of the Hall of Fame theme, you'll notice this one. That looks familiar, doesn't it?
Good timing.
I wonder if they had an idea. I wonder if they knew. I wonder if Kenseth even knows it is Hall of Fame and the paint scheme. This one's cool from Cole Custer. Throwing back to Jason Leffler, who was his childhood hero.
Oh, wow.
And Haas CNC's first win in the Xfinity Series back then, 2003. That's pretty cool, isn't it, Nate?
That looks really, really nice. Yeah, and a very nice tribute to the late Jason Leffler, who was, I think he won a few Xfinity races with the 41.
With that paint scheme. Yeah. Dipping down the Xfinity Series, Justin Allgaier. I'm assuming this is a Dale Sr. throwback to the old Wrangler car with a Hellman's paint scheme.
for sure. Regular.
Pretty nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that.
I like that look. I like that font on the 7, too. It looks
pretty
good.
I can tell you who approved that, I bet.
Yeah, I know. That would be Dale Jr., who approves all paint schemes at JRM. You'll know this paint scheme. You remember that card, Jeff?
Yeah, check that out. Yeah, that was Brother Ward. That was
Ward won at Rockingham in his first series start. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was the paint scheme, the old Gwaltney paint scheme. Were you in that race, by the way?
Oh, yeah. I was in that race. Yep.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah, you remember the ones you didn't win. Yep, I was there.
But you were happy for Ward that day, no doubt about it. So that'll be Jeb Burton's paint scheme this weekend. Speaking of Jeb Burton and Justin Allgaier, Xfinity Series. So back-to-back Jeff wins for Junior Motorsports. Are they starting to say to Joe Gibbs Racing, hey, we're here to play as well. It's not going to be Ty Gibbs' playground and Brandon Jones' playground this year. We're going to be on the scene as well.
It seems like it, you know. And I think we know Justin Allgaier. He's just solid as a rock. He's he's the experienced guy of the Xfinity Garage. He's going to run well. I think Noah is starting to really put it all together. You know, to me, Noah is learning how to be a mature race car driver, learning how to, you know, play on Friday and work on Saturday, kind of, so to speak, and then. Josh Berry, you know, he's going to win some more races. Josh Berry is a real deal. And then, you know, I don't know, you know, Sam Mayer, to me, that kid's fast. He's just got to get the dots connected, right? He's just got to connect the dots in a race. He will figure it out. And when he does, Sam Mayer's going to win a lot of races for Junior Motorsports as well.
And, of course, talk of the town this year, Jeff, has been Ty Gibbs leading the points, 3 wins. There's a lot going on at Joe Gibbs Racing these days, and yep. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion if Ty Gibbs continues to have success. You know,
you got to move him up
next year.
You got to move him up. I shouldn't say you have to, but why wouldn't you?
Right.
Unless there's not a seat at the end, but you know, why wouldn't you move Ty Gibbs up? Like, he looks ready to me, and you know, teach him how to be a Cup driver, not an Xfinity driver. So I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't move him up if there's a place for him to go.
I want to ask you about, back to the playoff grid, the Daniel Hemric all the way down in 12th. Does that surprise you? Did you think they would come out of the gate a little bit stronger in 2022? I know he's moving to a new team, but as strong as Colleague is, I didn't expect the defending champ to be just plus 17 above the cut line at this point.
Well, I have a little different take on that. I don't think Colleague is as strong as Gibbs and Junior Motorsports. I think Colleague does an incredible job of maximizing opportunities.
Yes.
But I don't think that they are as fast on a consistent basis as those other two teams. So I think they execute. I think they do a lot of good things. But I think they're still just a step behind on speed. And I think that Daniel Hemric's learning how to manage that. And ultimately, I think that kind of plays into Daniel's strength, to be honest with you. I don't view him as the fastest guy either. He's going to be consistent. He's going to be smart. He's going to win you some races because he's a racer. He's a hardcore racer, and he's going to win you some races. And I think he and Colleague kind of match up really well.
That's interesting what you say about Colleague, too, about maximizing their results, because we had A.J. Allmendinger here before Dover, and I had him on the podcast, and he was talking about his season. I looked at his season. I'm like, this looks pretty good. He's in the top 10 every week. He's got a win. No DNFs. And AJ's like, it's been pretty good. It's been pretty bad. And I'm like, isn't it your best average finish ever? And he's like, well, yeah, I'm averaging like a 4.2 finish. But this is what I say to Chris Rice. And, you know, like, we could be a little bit better. We could just be a little bit better. We're maximizing what we've got, but we're not quite at JRM Gibbs level in terms of having that championship level consistency. And he said, like, last year, he felt when they got the Phoenix, they were starting to, you know, slide downhill a little bit. And he's hoping that they kind of reverse that in the playoffs this year.
See what Colleague can do for the rest of the season. I would love to be Kyle Petty this week, guys. Kyle Petty charity ride, of course, is going on.
I'd love to be Kyle Petty every week.
Yeah, I was going to say, all to be Kyle Petty. Today they went from Bryce Canyon to Monument Valley. Jeff, the only problem was it was 31 degrees when they left Bryce Canyon this morning. A little chilly, but look who joined the group today. Eric Jones with his first ever leg in the Kyle Petty charity ride. Notice how bundled up he is. I count 1, 2, 3, 4 layers there for Eric Jones. Certainly having a lot of fun. Check out KylePettyCharityRide.com. to find out more and also how you can support them as well. We certainly wish a safe journey for all of our friends on that. When we come back, the man who finished second at Dover on Monday, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., finally a good finish for JTD Darty Racing. There's Stenhouse hanging out in the truck. We'll talk to him next.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
What part of your body is getting beaten up the worst?
I think you either have bum shoulders or bum knees. I had both of my ACLs repaired.
So how did your ACLs get damaged?
So my right one, I was 13 years old. I came up short on a jump, like a double jump. When I come up short, boom, like my lower leg just went forward and my femur bone stayed there. And
wow.
And I had to run it for 3 years. I couldn't have it repaired till I was 16 because my growth plates had to close before they could repair my ACL. And then I tore my left ACL. I was coming out of a corner. I just caught my toe. And it twisted my foot sideways. Pow.
On the ground?
I was coming out of the corner. My toe was on the foot peg. I was laid over just a little bit.
Oh, my God.
And it just that quick. Pow. And I knew instantly. I'm like, oh, this isn't good.
Man, you want to talk about stories you can listen to for hours, Nate. The GOAT, Ricky Carmichael, on the Dale Jr. Download. You're both grimacing over here.
I'm a little too squeamish to listen to that for
hours. Make sure you want to catch it tomorrow, 5 p.m. You're still grimacing, Jeff. Come on.
Well, Steve and I told him when he was on Motor Mouse, we told him, hey, man, when you go do that Dale Jr. Download, it's like Truth Serum. All that stuff is going to fly out.
I know. And the final Supercross race of the season, Saturday on CNBC. You can relax now.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you want to hear those stories. Speaking of a guy on motorcycles, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. started on motorcycles way back in the day. Currently, though, he is in a truck because a tornado just went through the farm. Everybody okay, Stenhouse, at the Stenhouse house?
It did not go through our farm, but...
Near the farm.
Less than a mile down the road, I guess. They said a tornado touched down, so we don't have any power at the ranch right now, so... We came to the other side of Mooresville to grab some food, and then I remembered, dang, I got to do this show, but luckily we weren't at home because I didn't have Wi-Fi anyway, so better service over here.
That's awesome, man. Hey, congratulations on the terrific finish on Sunday, second for you guys at Dover. How needed was that finish for you guys at JTG Darty Racing?
It was very much needed. Obviously, anytime you get a good run like that, have an opportunity to chase a leader down, especially at a place like Dover, always builds a lot of confidence in the team. Us as a team, we felt like, there's been a handful of races where we've had good speed, just nothing to really show for it. And then, you put three short tracks where we've really struggled on top of it. And I feel like, that really makes the season look like a bad start. So, we felt like we've had some speed. We finally were able to put it all together on a track that has some speed. Which makes us look forward to, what's coming with Darlington and Kansas coming up next. So we still got some work to do, but, the short tracks are something that we got to get a handle on.
So, Ricky, you guys go to the Daytona 500 running really well, shot to win the thing, get wrecked really late, and then from there it just seemed like you have not been able to get your momentum back. You go this weekend and run really well. What is the key to keeping everybody pumped up, keeping yourself pumped up so that you can go and just fight through a tough start of the year?
Well, I think that's kind of the culture that we have at JTG Darty Racing is just everybody's buckled down. We're a lot of good racers, a lot of hard racers, and, they see the speed that we've had at certain racetracks, and I think that pumps them up. They know that I really like Dover, and everybody's tuned in when, we're working on new setups and, have meetings, and it keeps everybody pumped up. But obviously when you come off a second place finish, that was huge momentum for everybody in the shop to show up Monday. They watched the race Monday from the shop, and I'm sure they got a little more work done Monday afternoon after that finish. So we got a lot of good racers, and you know, it's tough to beat, you know, good momentum, but it's hard to put all that together. So we got, you know, Darlington this weekend that we're really focused on, feel like we can, you know, carry that momentum that we had.
So Ricky, we got a couple of folks who have called in to chat with you. So we'll start with James in New York. James, you're on with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing there, Ricky?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. I wanted to ask, after your second place finish at Dover, what have you learned going into Darlington this weekend, which is a track similar to Dover?
Yeah, I mean, the high speeds and high banking is definitely, you know, lend yourself to, you know, I guess the same philosophy of a setup. We're definitely going to have some differences in setup, but, you know, for us, it's just, you know, trying to get something close. And, you know, I got some simulator work I got to do tomorrow, and, you know, hopefully we can get that dialed in. We felt like we had a really good simulator test before we went to Dover, and you know, you got to start close in practice. You only got, you know, 15 minutes before you got to go qualify. And that's kind of, you know, the key to a successful weekend is unloading where you need to be. So that sim session I have tomorrow is going to be important, but it'll be, you know, it'll be, we got some good notes from Dover.
Hey, Ricky, you said finishing second at Dover, you guys were finally able to put a race together. And that's exactly what Chase Elliott said as well. Like, for the first time all season, they executed the whole way, put a whole race together and won. So what, for you, for your team, what was the key? I know it was a tire management race. Was it a caution falling the right time? Was it managing strategy well? What did you guys do to be able to put a full race together for the first time this year?
I feel like for us, it all started, like I said, the simulator test. We had a good test there. Showed up, practice, you know, it drove similar to the simulator. And so we started making a few adjustments and, you know, felt like we were happy with the speed. And then when we dropped the green flag on Sunday, I was like, wow, this thing's, you know, really good. So from then on, it was, you know, let's pit with the leaders. Let's not do anything crazy. We had really good pit stops all day. We didn't speed on pit road. Our tire management was really good. My car was good on the long run. We didn't have any tire issues, which, you know, let us, you know, just do normal stops and do everything normal. We had a good race car, which makes up for a lot of issues as well. So, you know, for us, it was just, you know, staying within our limits and not pushing the car too hard and having those good pit stops. And, you know, Darlington's a long race, you know, a lot of pit stops, a lot of, you know, car management. Keep it off the wall. Don't wear your tires out. So it'd be similar.
Hey, so Ricky, just real quick, Jeff brought the point earlier. It's going to be a bit of a learning curve for drivers this weekend. Less grip with this race car. So how will this car fare at Darlington, you think?
Talking to a few of the guys that did the test, you know, the 1 and 2 is as fast as ever. Sketchy with the new car. You're not sure exactly when it might step out on you. Which has been kind of the theme, I feel like, for this race car, especially on, you know, the faster racetracks we go to. But then 3 and 4 is where I feel like is going to be the biggest difference that, you know, the fans are going to see in us drivers. You know, with the downshifting that we're, you know, capable of doing with this new car, you know, 3 and 4, Jeff knows, you were always looking for a little bit better drive up out of the corner. And so now we can downshift when you run that bottom lane in 3 and 4. And so that'll be something totally different for us that we haven't done at Darlington. And I don't know if it'll, you know, take the high line away or not.
All right, bud. Well, y'all enjoyed dinner and glad the tornado didn't actually hit the ranch. That's good stuff, man. We'll see you in Darlington. Okay.
Thank y'all. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. joining us after his big second place finish at Dover. Certainly hope the momentum continues for that race team. All right, Jeff, what you going to be watching for on Sunday?
All right, listen, I want to see who, you know, he just talked about it, 3 and 4. You know, 1 and 2 at Darlington is the corner that looks really cool. You know, in golf, you know, you drive for show and you putt for dough. Well, 3 and 4 is putting. And that's where the race is won. 1 and 2 is, you know, it's kind of one groove. You know where you got to go. 3 and 4, a lot of options. What will this new car do in 3 and 4, and what drivers can find a way to take advantage of?
After our esteemed analysts, Jeff Burton and DJ both said they're expecting yellows. This guy said, I'm expecting people to have to put it in the wall. which always happens at Darlington. I'm looking forward to action. I mean, I know it's not good for the drivers, but I think it's fun for us to watch that chaos.
You got a pick real quick?
Give me Chase Elliott.
Okay.
Two in a row.
Who you got?
Oh, gosh. Denny Hamlin. Darlington, how do you not go with Denny Hamlin?
There you go.
Pretty good there.
I'm going to go with Martin Truex Jr. because I think he's going to be pretty strong. He ran well at Dover, and I think they certainly showed something there. Once again, congratulations to the Hall of Fame inductees for 2023. Matt Kenseth, Kirk Shelmerdine, who we didn't get on the air today, but 1 and 2, Herschel McGriff, and Mike Helton as well. We'll see you back here Monday. We'll talk about Darlington.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.